call to order the sparsely populated Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. Colleagues, today is April 22nd, 2015, and we are convened for an informational meeting regarding specialty courts overview. Mr. Bender, would you like to tee anything up for us?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Today, we've asked both the Judicial Department and the Criminal Justice Commission to come and to give you an overview of the specialty courts in Oregon. Specialty courts are courts that coordinate treatment and other services for offenders in addition to performing their regular adjudication functions. And we've asked for a report on what the specialty courts are in Oregon, how they are, how many we have, where they are. And in terms of simply looking at the budget side of it, as opposed to necessarily policy questions, we're asking for information on how much they cost to operate, because clearly they cost more than a court that doesn't provide these services. But on the other end, their goal is to reduce costs by reducing recidivism. So the question is to what extent we can tell whether that's actually happening or not, and whether these courts are effective in reducing the costs of public safety in Oregon, even after including the additional costs for operating them. Some of these questions, some of these answers are clear, some of them aren't exactly known, but I think they, both agencies have put together a good presentation for you.
All right, let's bring up Phil Lemon and Paul Egbert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Phil Lemon from the Judicial Department. With me is Paul Egbert, who is the Criminal Justice Commission Operations Manager. Just for your frame of reference, I'll be giving the sweeping overviews, and Paul will be answering all the detailed questions. So,
we got to take care of that.
Specialty courts have been around in Oregon since 1991. The first drug court nationwide was established in Miami in 1989, and Multnomah was hot on their heels with the first drug court in Oregon in 1991. Since that time, they've expanded both in number and in type. So we have family courts, mental health courts, DUII courts, and a variety of things, most of which follow the treatment model and apply them to different populations. The only clarification I would add to what Mr. Bender said earlier is family courts often deal with dependency cases, whereas abuse and neglect, and there are alcohol and drug or other issues, but they are not necessarily criminal offenders when they appear before the court. So I just want to make that clarification. In 1993, Oregon had its first family court. In 2000, as you see on the slide, OJD prepared a statewide rollout plan for both drug and family courts. There was a reservation in the emergency fund, so OJD came in with a plan to do that, and the legislature released that funding. As time went on, the Criminal Justice Commission became involved in drug court issues in 2005 to address the large-scale work being done to address methamphetamine in a variety of public safety and treatment contexts. And as you can see, over time, the Criminal Justice Commission role has expanded to include high-risk property offenders in the legislature's work on Measure 57. The legislature used federal Relief and Recovery Act funds as backfill for funding for many drug courts, and then in 2013, through House Bill 3194, its role was solidified to do more standards, evaluations, and kind of the making sure we have effective drug courts throughout the state. So as of this year, there is a specialty court of some kind in 27 of Oregon's 36 counties, and we'll have a map and some additional information on that.
So what is a specialty court? Essentially, House Bill 3194 out of the 13th session expanded upon the existing definition of a drug court program by adding that specialty courts would also include veteran courts, mental health courts, or other similar court or docketing system. The makeup of a specialty court has some core roles within it. This is not an entire list of who's involved locally, but the key roles on a specialty court are the judge, the attorneys involved, and they take a non-adversarial approach. A coordinator for the program, probation officer or caseworker, depending on the type of specialty court, law enforcement officer, treatment provider. And there's a collaborative approach amongst this multidisciplinary team in working on behalf of the offender or the participant in monitoring their supervision, their services, and their response to the interventions. They meet weekly, both in staff time and in a court session that's overseen by the judge. We have there's a range of the courts we have depending on what kind of court they are, but basically we believe there's 66 specialty courts in Oregon. There's a breakdown here on the slide of what type they are. And then there's kind of a catch-all category of alternative docket or types of court processes that maybe are missing some of the elements of what we refer to as the 10 key components or the foundational work behind specialty courts. Yet they're an alternative system of interacting with participants and doing something to help them on their behalf. And we provide to the federal agencies indication of how many courts are in Oregon. So there's about 84, anywhere from 84 to 90, what we would designate as types of specialty courts or alternative docket systems. This is just a slide that shows kind of by county the types and where we have these specialty courts located. Just a handful of counties where they don't exist.
So next we're going to give you a quick run on some of the pieces of the puzzle in funding a specialty court. So what we're trying to show here is that part of the budget support for specialty courts is through general fund appropriated to the Judicial Department that primarily funds the judges and the judicial support staff. And then the coordinator position that Paul was talking about sometimes is funded through the OJD general fund budget. Other times it's funded through either grants from CJC or the federal government or some other entity. So that's why you see the split there, and the coordinators kind of have a foot in both camp. Then, depending on what type of court and the other participants, it can be state general fund, state other funds, federal funds, county money. It can be indirect state funding, so the state funds community corrections and where you have a parole officer, a probation parole officer involved. That's an example of an indirect, what we call an indirect state fund here. But as you can see, there's a lot of different pieces to the puzzle. There's a lot of different players that come to the table, and it basically is designed under these evidence-based principles, but to meet the local demand and the type of person that you're organizing around. So to look at it in a little different way, State General Fund provides funding for always the judge and always the court staff and some coordinator positions through OJD's biennial appropriation for the trial courts. You provide general fund to the Criminal Justice Commission for its grant program. That typically focuses on operational costs, including some additional personnel, treatment, and other supports. As I mentioned, there are federal funds that come to both the Criminal Justice Commission, to the Oregon Judicial Department, and other entities. And for example, the Veterans Court here in Marion County is funded by a federal grant that goes to the Marion County Sheriff's Office that then provides funding for the coordinator position and training and some other services. So again, there's a variety of trails that get you to yes here. Other funds, there's asset forfeiture, that a portion of which is proceeds that are statutorily dedicated to CJC for uses in this area. Local funds we talked about, you have district attorneys, community corrections, if there's DHS caseworkers involved, defense attorneys through the Public Defense Services Office, mental health. So there's again, this isn't an exhaustive list, but kind of, again, gives you an example. Depending on the type of the players and the mix of funding that they bring to the table, it's all involved here. And then the other thing that we just wanted to make sure you understood is with the passage of Obamacare and more universal access to alcohol and drug and mental health treatment coverage, an increasing amount of the treatment services that are used by these specialty courts are coming through those insurance avenues instead of the state having to directly fund those through a CJC grant or other service.
So here's a map that just indicates where our funding resides currently with programs. This is, we support 34 specialty courts, which is a subset of that earlier number of 66. And this is just a kind of an overview of where we have our grant dollars. Looking at the breakdown of our CJC budget, we have three main sources, as Mr. Lemon referred to earlier. We have general fund in the amount of $6.6 million that's used to support specialty courts. We use federal funds this last biennium as part of the support there that we get from an annual formula grant through BJA, JAG funding, Justice Assistance Grants funding. And then the other fund represents the amount of asset forfeiture that goes towards operational costs for specialty courts. So an overall budget of $12.5 million over this biennium. What we noticed in year one was that there was a difference between the proposed budget and the actual expenditures of $793,768. We believe that that's primarily due to the insurance impact, which we were curious about during this cycle to see what kind of impact would be there. And then we also collect from our grantees what are the other support amounts and other funds that they include in the operational costs. And so that amount was $2.2 million, as you see on the slide, that it's coming in from other sources, federal, local, perhaps other state sources that help fund their program. When you look at by category, the breakdown, you can see that 30% of what we spend is on personnel costs, both OJD positions and other positions, in some cases, district attorney time, probation officer time, you know, whatever is deemed appropriate for that particular program. 64% on treatment and other supports related to treatment. Urinalysis testing, for example, mentors, other things like that. A small amount on administrative and just doing grant management and accounting and other indirect costs. And then all other categories add up to about 4% of our costs.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's easier to go back. On slide 12, that treatment and support, is that you're contracting with agencies to do that, or is that's not in-house? There's no treatment and support in-house, is there?
Chair Shields, Representative Wisnant. Yes, this helps pay for treatment costs, and so whatever insurance isn't taken care of or whatever locally isn't managed for that participant would come out of this amount here. Did I miss the question?
Yeah, so
who provides our treatment?
Oh, who tries? I'm sorry, local nonprofit treatment providers,
yes,
in
is.
Most cases.
Okay.
And in some cases, though, a county may administer that directly. So it depends on what their local system.
A clarification. So you're saying the county mental health may provide the training or the service and treatment too? But
as Chair Shields, Representative Wisnant, yes, that's correct. Is you may have a county system, for example, Linn County, they provide their treatment through their county health system. And a lot of counties contract that out. So this represents and doesn't break out the difference there.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So turning toward the budget request that you have before you this session, for the Judicial Department, part of the cost of these specialty courts is contained in the general fund request for trial court operations. So we do not have, there's no budget structure or program in the OJD budget titled specialty courts or that you give to us directly for these specialty courts. They go basically into the trial court operations budget. One of our policy option packages, 308, is permanent funding for drug court coordinator positions. These are positions that are currently funded through CJC grants. They are generally established positions that were eliminated in the reductions in 2009. And CJC came in again with the federal funding that we got in the recession, and you allocated those to the Criminal Justice Commission to support these positions to continue them. And so what we'd like to do is move that money to the Judicial Department so these are permanent positions, we have stable funding, and kind of get them back on the permanent side of the ledger as opposed to a biennium grant type funding. POP 312 has some overlap with 308. So if you fund 308, we have some additional grants some of which are related to specialty courts, others are not. But that is just our expenditure limitation for these other funds. And so if you fund POP 308, that will shrink substantially. If you do not fund POP 308, then we just need the limitation authority to accept those other funds and continue with those services. And then in the Criminal Justice Commission, there's $13 million general fund in their current service level budget request for these specialty court grant programs. So I think I've given you most of the information on POP 308 already. Most of those positions were results of the reductions in 2009. There are permanent positions in 14 judicial districts, and again, that would give us stable funding and help with the retention. As you know, anytime you have a limited duration position, if you've got somebody in there and they know their duration's coming, it's always a little, puts people on edge a little bit on whether they're going to have a job or need to find something else. And we've heard us talk about this in our technology services as well. So again, we see a benefit to having those positions both in the Judicial Department budget and on a permanent basis and have that stabilized funding. So that's $2.8 million in 15-17 and involves 14 positions and 15.75 FTE. 312, as I explained, there's some overlap with 308. We have Violence Against Women Act grant funds in there as well and some other things, but that's a total of just under $3 million in other funds and $340,000 in federal funds.
The next few slides will talk about how the specialty courts are evaluated and what CJC is doing in terms of monitoring and oversight. The first place I'll start is with standards. As part of House Bill 3194 in the 13th session, CJC was directed to draft standards and in consultation with OJD to provide those for specialty courts. Our work on standards actually began ahead of that legislation in 2012, and so we've been working on standards for quite some time. We made sure to incorporate the work of the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, as they also are addressing standards on a national level, and incorporated those standards into our thinking and what we're drafting and developing. We've sought feedback from numerous stakeholders in Oregon on the standards, especially those that are practitioners within this work. The next volume of national standards is expected to be released at the national conference in July. Those will be incorporated into our thinking and our standards as well. The good news is one of the members of that work is also our consultant in terms of the development of our standards here. So we have a good idea that we're already aligned with their work. And then our desire is to release these standards in coordination with OJD in this calendar year. Another thing that we're doing at CJC that we're very proud of and has been something that's been very well received by the specialty courts is our peer review process. This process goes hand in hand with our standards development. The standards are the foundation for the process that we've built around peer reviews. We started with the adult drug courts. We're not peer reviewing all types, and we piloted that back in 2013. Since that point, we've trained 26 peer reviewers, 9 of which are judges that have worked with specialty courts. And so in teams of 2, these peer reviewers go out and meet with other courts and spend a couple of days with them, interview the key staff, observe court, observe staffing, and results in providing information about where improvements could be made, and they're provided with a report, and it's noted the strengths and the innovations that are seen. And so it really gets to the goals that we have as part of our peer review process, and one of those goals is to create a learning community within the specialty court world and to share best practices across Oregon. And this has already started to happen and has been a benefit of this program. We then, as CJC, identify gaps in training, identify best practices, innovative practices that we can then share across the state as we work with these programs. And it's intended that these are available for both CJC-funded specialty courts and those that are not funded by us. And so we actually have two courts that are not funded by CJC that will receive a peer review this year because they've heard about their peers having been peer reviewed and are interested in having the same process. So we provide feedback to courts and then help essentially all the programs do a better job of adhering to best practices. Drug court research in general is pretty substantial. This is the most researched of the evidence-based programs. We've demonstrated that specialty courts, drug courts specifically, are effective nationally and in Oregon. They've been demonstrated to be a cost-effective option to incarceration. The state of Oregon conducted a statewide adult drug court study in 2011 and just concluded a random control trial of four sites in Oregon in 2013, and so we have year one outcomes on that particular study of four courts that were set up to deal with what we call Measure 57 offenders, so property nonviolent substance using offenders. A little bit about that study. There were four sites, Multnomah, Umatilla, Jackson, and Douglas. Each developed local programs that participated in the study. These were all medium to high risk property offenders. There was a large amount of planning and work, as a random control trial is onerous work and takes several years. And the randomization began in 2010, and 11 was completed through March of 2013. And the one-year results of 2014 have been looked at for a full sample. I've provided one slide in support of that. If this slide looks at new charges for people that are involved in the Measure 57 court. So the orange bars are for those that are in the Measure 57 drug court, and the blue bars are those in the control group or probation as usual. And you can see in every case broken down by the type of charge, there were less charges overall for any charge and then broken down by type. So this shows the percentage of who received a charge within 1 year. And we're now looking at year two data, and we'll look at year three data. So as this goes out, we'll be able to see if this continues to hold in terms of the outcomes. CJC over the last biennium with OJD has coordinated on several fronts. One is that in 2013 we held a training for specialty court personnel. There was over 250 in attendance. It was very well received. The national and local trainers did a great job, and it was something that had been missing for a couple of years from Oregon, so it was timely and very beneficial based on all the reports we heard. We're collaborating around the data system, which is in desperate need of enhancement. You can't get to it from the web. It's on an old platform. So we're working together to look at options in terms of how we can improve that system for the practitioners that use it. We're working together on standards, which I referred to earlier. And also, we ensure that between the two departments that the vital staff needed that are OJD employees for these courts are funded either through the grant or through the operational costs at OJD.
Paul and Phil, can I interrupt you? I had a constituent come to me recently who felt that the referral process in the DUII courts in Multnomah County were troublesome, in that perhaps it was, and I'm not sure I've got the terminology right, that the ADIS was sending people to a particular treatment programs without any real basis, but based on a personal relationship perhaps. And I was wondering, you know, going back to the recidivism data, do we have any recidivism data based on provider, or is it just based on how one particular court is doing?
Senator Shields, I'm not aware of data by provider, at least that CJC is currently looking at. It's more at the program level and more really at the intervention level of the type of court it is, and most of that research is around our drug courts.
And is there some guidance on who the, and ADIS stands for alcohol and drug evaluation specialist or something like that? Is there guidance around who they can refer to? Would there be a reason why one particular outfit would get, you know, the bulk of referrals and the rest of the providers only get a handful?
Senator Shields, I can't answer that right now. We tried to get Judge Block, who presides over one of the Dewey courts in Multnomah County, to be here today, but he was called away on a family emergency, so was not able to attend. Okay. I can get those general answers for you if you want me to follow up more specifically. If you want to give me some additional information offline, then we can certainly look at that.
Yeah.
I know that's been an issue in some locations, and the court is aware of those things, but I couldn't tell you what the exact follow-up has been.
And does the ADIS work for AMH, or do they work for the courts, or how does that relationship work? Do you know? Or do you want to get back to
it? They are, I believe they are through AMH. They're not court employees, but they are part of the DUI system.
They're certified by OHA. And
why don't you come up and put your name for the record?
I'm in the back. I apologize. Senator Shields, members of the committee, my name is David Factor. I'm staff counsel at OJD. The ADIS, the ADES, the Alcohol, Drug, and Evaluation Specialists, there's one in every community who does this work, whether it's in DUI diversion cases or in drug courts or other entities. The court, in order, before someone gets placed in a treatment program, they go to the ADIS, who's an independent certified by the person certified by OHA. They get an evaluation to determine what level of treatment they need, and then there's a referral panel in every county that's also certified, and then they get referrals to those treatment providers through the ADIS to get the treatment that it was indicated in their evaluation.
And does the client have a choice on where they can go?
I believe so, but I'm not certain. And in different counties, it's going to be different how many providers you have that are going to be licensed and certified. And so in some, you're going to have some pretty slim pickings, and in others, you probably will have quite a few to choose between. Plus, some are certified for different levels of providing service. So we can get more information to you about how many, where, and how they are get their clients.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
So now we want to conclude with a little discussion about what's next. As you could tell from the first slide, we've kind of been doing this for quite a while, but the issues change and the funding change and things happen. So we wanted to give you an idea of where OJD and CJC have talked about going, and some of those just involve a little shift in roles. Some involve budgeting decisions and other legislative decisions. But the first thing we want to continue to do, obviously, is to maintain the best practice standards and peer reviews. They are working. We want to keep an eye on them to make sure that we keep our specialty courts high performing. We want to have the permanent funding for those high performing courts. So what we're thinking about is that right now we have a system where CJC is responsible for funding many of these positions on a grant basis. And what we'd like to see to build and maintain this system is to, once a court reaches that level of high performance, then they get permanent funding, and CJC can focus both its grant efforts and its evaluation efforts on more of a different population. So just as when you're starting something, you monitor it more closely, once you're in the groove and you have something stable and high performing, you don't have to pay as close attention to it, and we can rely more on a data monitoring system perhaps than a peer review or an evaluation system, or at least extend the frequency of that. A shift in the roles between OJD and CJC. One of the other reductions that OJD took in 2009 was a central coordination resource person. And so that was the person in the state court administrator's office who knew OTCMS, who had the data, who did a lot of these coordination and surveying questions that we now do kind of on an ad hoc basis and through our budget shop. But we really don't have a central coordination resource in the state court administrator's office to focus on specialty courts. So we have talked about bringing that back. On the CJC side, again, they would focus on standards and certification, evaluation, and funding of the new courts. And then we would continue our collaboration to develop this, the web-based system upgrade for OTCMS, and also continue the collaboration on training and the data collection, which I think we can agree is working very well for everyone in this process. So again, Oregon's had a long and I think very successful track record with specialty courts. The other thing that I think is difficult for the legislature to work with is that we don't have a mandate that every court have, every county have a drug court, veterans court, mental health court, whatever. These are kind of organically grown to meet local needs. We need willing partners coming to the table. Funding is always an issue with these things. So if the mental health system is short in one county, or if the sheriff doesn't want to contribute a probation officer in another county or want special funding for that, there's just always that, how are you going to kind of cobble this or piece this together? And I think that from a state standpoint, it makes it difficult to call it a system, call it a program, because it really depends on a lot of local circumstances and different funding methods. But we've, the courts and the communities have expanded these to new populations. We have four veterans courts, that all of which operate a little bit differently and have a little different focus, but that's a new area of emphasis. And again, it's taking that treatment approach and the court-based supervision process to look at a population, address the underlying issues that at least assist or contribute to criminal behavior or problem behavior, and work on those things. And so the research on those, some of those types of court, is developing, is evolving, but the it's based on a successful model through the drug courts. But that's something that nationally, both nationally and in Oregon, is still kind of, we're not at the level of maturity we are in those other specialty courts as we are with drug courts. So I'd be, that concludes what we had planned to tell you. Be glad to answer questions or provide other information.
Representative Wisnett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation. It's very interesting, and it was a good recap. I have two questions and a statement. I think it was slide six, you listed all, you don't have to go back to it, I don't think, gentlemen, is you listed all the different courts. Is there some other courts that other states are doing that we haven't looked at or considered?
Senator Shields and Representative Wisnett, I would say that the type of courts we have here in Oregon is reflective of what we have nationally. And so based on the list I've seen and the different problems that are being addressed in other states, it's very similar, if not exact.
Thank you. Next.
Senator, if I can add to that, Mr. Chair, Representative Witness, the other developing type of court that we're starting with is reentry courts. And so that, again, is a that was in House Bill 3194 from the 13th session. So when people are coming out of prison, you again have this court-focused supervision and treatment model. We have one established in Multnomah County, but again, those are kind of in their early phases. But those that's another kind of court that is used in other parts of the country.
Thank you. Next question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Salem has started a vet court, and I think later you talked about there's maybe four statewide. Could you tell me how they got the grant, and does the is the Oregon Veterans Affairs Department, are they helping you look for those and identify those? Is that on your plate to try to find those? Who's leading the effort to go after that grant money and establish vet courts? Committee members, Chair, the Oregon doesn't have active duty military, but our guard unit has pulled more than their fair share in these recent wars, and so we have a growing veterans community. So I hope that we can find ways to increase. Deschutes County is still looking. We're trying to get a veterans court. Very large population in Deschutes County because of recreational opportunities and also military units from Deschutes County. So that was my second question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the four courts are located in Klamath, which is the oldest veterans court, and they're also in Lane, Marion, and Multnomah County, Multnomah being the most recent. This is one of those things where, again, I can't give you one single answer. I would say in general, that the Department of Veterans Affairs has been very interested and willing to participate in these things. I don't know that there's a formal judicial department to Department of Veterans Affairs work group or communications with that. The judge who presides over the veteran court here in Marion County, I know, is working all the time with Director Smith and the ODVA. One of the essential reasons for that is that the Federal Veterans Administration and the state has access to some services. So part of the rationale behind a veterans court is to get that population in a room at one place at one time, so you get the agencies providing those services there as well. So it's much easier to connect those veterans with the services that they're entitled to through the federal or state systems. So I couldn't tell you right now what the exact coordination and collaboration method is, but I do know that it's definitely occurring, and ODVA is supporting that effort.
The other part of that, Mr. Chair,
uh-huh.
was how much was the grant? Was that grant one time, or is it a continuation grant for the Marion County?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is a three-year grant through the Bureau of Justice Assistance. It funds the coordinator position and also some training, travel. They do have mentors, as Paul referred to in one of his presentations. It requires a 25% in-kind match, which we put forward as judicial salary and court staff. But that is a three-year grant. I believe we're in our second year.
How was that?
I believe that's correct. And at that point, the county and the state will have to look at how whether we're going to sustain that, and if so, how.
Thank you very much for those answers. Mr. Chair, I have an advertisement for you that I have a bill, 3017, that has been referred to this committee. And I appreciate the director of us, Criminal Justice Commission Smith, for helping me work with that. It's asking to do a review of the mental health courts. Every session this body gets together and we say mental health's going to be our priority, we're going to address mental health, and it sort of slips through the cracks every session. We've got I think 13 or 12 mental health courts now. It's a good time if you see what we the evaluation we just received on drug courts. This bill would allow us to do the same review of mental health and see if we're getting what we want to and need to, and I would hope that the chair would support that bill.
Well, as you know, when a bill comes to Ways and Means, it really goes to the big co-chairs, and they don't exactly give us the power to hear bills like the policy committee.
Sure, but
they do everything that I ask them to do, so I'll be sure to.
Wow. You're very influential.
I'll be sure to demand it.
Well, I'm sure they're watching all these subcommittee meetings.
That's right. But that's good to know that that is in our committee. It sounds like a worthy topic. I think, one of the things that I've been interested in, too, and I've talked to Mr. Schmidt about this, is a lot of the batterers intervention programs have mixed evidence in the literature that they're effective. And it concerns me that we might take a child who's been abused, remove that child from a home, send the father, usually the father, to a batterer's intervention class. They go through it for 6 months, complete it, and then we say, ha, okay, you're cured, back to living with the child, when we don't really know whether or not that father is any better than he was before. And I think that's something that I'd be interested in the Criminal Justice Commission trying to dive into and take a look at in the future. All right, good. Anything else for the good of the order? Dr. Bates, you got here just in time.
I got it. Help you guys wrap it up. Thank you. They're a wonderful job.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it.
Got a long testimony for 941. Is that what you're
talking to corrections
about addiction issues? So, all right, good. Well, thank you very much for your presentation. And anything, Mr. Bender?
No.
You
said
you're going here. I'm not here. This meeting is adjourned. This meeting is adjourned.